All right, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Secretary Hepler, Kevin Roblin here again, Deputy Secretary with Game Fish and Parks. Just wanted to talk to you and give you some information on the Missouri River Refuge discussion and where we're at with that discussion. As you know, this discussion started about a year ago, actually. In December, we had a stakeholder meeting with a public meeting, per se. We had about 100 folks attend that meeting that evening. It was in Pierre to discuss the Missouri River refuges. We have 21 refuges up and down the Missouri River that get variable use as far as waterfall occupancy. Some have a lot of waterfall staging on those refuges. Some have very little. Throughout the four-month period, November, December, January, February, those are the 4 months we quantify use. These refuges are in place to really hold staging waterfall and to enhance the opportunity of hunting those waterfall off the water, essentially, to keep those birds on the river so then they go out in the agricultural fields to feed to enhance that opportunity. There's a lot of passion around this issue, as one might expect, because what we have here, we have water hunters that want to hunt on the Missouri River, and then we have land hunters that want those waterfall to be undisturbed on the Missouri River so they can hunt the agricultural fields. So there's different forms of hunting of waterfall. I'll get into that a little bit, but today I really just wanted to give you the objective information we have, the science we have, the numbers we have. Rocco Morano's actually traveling today, so I'm pinch hitting for him a little bit and presenting some of the data that he compiled over the years. Waterfall are managed federally, so a lot of the data and graphs I have are federal graphs and data from the Fish and Wildlife Service. Also, though, the graphs that are pertaining directly to South Dakota, those would be our data that we've quantified here in South Dakota. So I'll go through some information, and we'll have questions at the end, and I'm sure that'll spark some more conversation, but we owe it to the constituents, our constituents, our hunters and anglers, to continue this conversation. We did have a meeting in November to talk about waterfall recruitment, retention, and reactivation, and I'll show you some graphs there as to why that's such an important conversation to have. We're in a very difficult spot when it comes to that right now across the state. We're losing waterfall hunters at a very precipitous rate, and it is very concerning. So we'll get into all that, and the refuge discussion is part of that conversation. So the refuge review, again, we have 21 refuges up and down the Missouri River, and those of you that were on the commission when we talked about the Northeast refuges, very similar authority. The commission has the authority to adopt rules to create, modify, or vacate state refuges. These 21 refuges are considered state refuges, so the authority is given to this body right here to manage those refuges, the dates, the areas, those sorts of things. 14 right now are open to duck hunting after the Canada goose season closes. 7 are closed to all waterfall hunting during all waterfall season. So there's differences in regulatory authority and different things regarding those seasons and how those seasons are opened or closed. One of the real alarming things that we see here, and I just mentioned it earlier, and I'm going to show this graph, and you're probably going to see this graph again today because the next conversation piece on the agenda is R3 waterfall hunters. And South Dakota resident Canada goose hunters, as you can see, reached an all-time high of about 25,000 in 2001. We're dropped down to less than 9,000 today. So this is a very concerning trend. We're dropping, that's a 60% decrease, really, and that's very concerning. So I talk about this because, you know, waterfall use on these refuges obviously depends on how much waterfall is in the area, and are duck numbers up, down, are goose numbers up or down, but how many folks are actually pursuing those ducks and pursuing those geese is also something to take into consideration. What about duck hunters in South Dakota? In South Dakota, we have a similar trend. Again, about 25,000 duck hunters in 96, 97, 98. As you can see, that trend's over just over 10,000. This is probably the most alarming user group we have as far as the lack of participation in the last 20 years. This is a red flag. This is a very concerning thing. If this rate continues the way it is going, we aren't going to have any waterfall hunters in 15 years. So now's the time to have that conversation. How do we bring those folks back? How do we get more hunters in the field? Is it a lack of ducks? You know, are there no ducks to hunt in South Dakota? Are there no geese to hunt on the Missouri River? Those sorts of questions come to mind because use exceeding availability? Is supply equaling demand? Those sorts of things. So we look at the number of ducks, and we look at where that's been over the last few years. And you can see here, this is the Western Prairie Great Plains spring breeding index or population for the Canada geese that utilize the central flyway. There seems to be no shortage of geese. And our Canada goose hunters in South Dakota will attest to that. We have fairly good goose numbers. We have more geese West River than we've ever had. Goose numbers are strong, very strong. As you just were told, we have Canada goose depredation issues where we have so many geese, they're causing a lot of crop damage to soybean fields and wheat fields and even corn fields when those corn are just emerging out of the soil. So this is a graph that shows goose numbers aren't a concern. Looking at ducks, breeding population of ducks, one of the things here, that first graph on the upper left-hand corner there is total ducks. And you could see in the early 90s, well, I should say 60s, we've seen an all-time low. We've seen an all-time low in the mid-80s, and then we've seen things rebound from there. In 2005, we've seen a really strong rebound all the way up to about 2015. We dropped a little bit there. Weather is a really dependent factor on duck production. Duck production is really closely associated to the amount of water on the landscape, the amount of seasonal wetlands, the amount of temporary wetlands that are available for those ducks during the breeding season. So you'll see a wet cycle, you'll see duck populations boom. You'll see a dry cycle, duck populations will slowly decline. And you can kind of see that in this cyclical graph right here. If I were to put a precip graph up alongside this, you know, the population levels here, it'd mirror one another very closely. There's always a lag effect. You know, the drought hits, ducks slowly will take some years to feel the effects of those drought years. One thing, mallard is at the all-time high. Long-term average, mallard is, that dotted line is the average line over the last 40 years, and it just shows the long-term trends of where these populations are at. Mallard, gadwall, American widgeons above that trend line, green-winged teal, blue-winged teal. Just overall indicating that we don't have a shortage of ducks either across the central flyway. And I emphasize mallard because mallard is probably the most pursued duck species in South Dakota. Those folks that are hunting waterfowl on the Missouri River, or anywhere for that matter in South Dakota, are a lot of times targeting the mallard populations that are feeding in those cornfields and giving them a great recreational opportunity. So looking at midwinter survey trends on the Missouri, and this graph is extremely messy. And I asked Rocco, actually, you know, throw some trend lines on there, but leave the actual data points on there for one reason, to show the variability we see year to year to year in those counts. Now, you look at the top graph, that's North Dakota. That's North Dakota number of mallards counted, and that's North Dakota's number of Canada geese counted in blue. Canada geese is in blue, like I mentioned, mallards in gray, and that trend line on the top indicates we have an increasing number of Canada geese staying in North Dakota over those midwinter counts. These counts are, again, from November, December, January, February. So one thing there to take home, that linear trend line is showing an increase in Canada geese in North Dakota. Mallards, not so much. Pretty stable there. Not seeing much of a slope in that trend line. Now, if you look at South Dakota, there's some real variability here. I mean, just to show you, one year we'll have a ton of ducks in South Dakota. The next year, we hardly have any. And it's nothing to do with that population. Once again, a lot of this has to do with the weather that we're experiencing that given year. And we're seeing that in, you know, these trend lines, that top line indicates the number of Canada geese that are staging in South Dakota. So we're having a decrease of Canada geese staying on that Missouri River corridor in South Dakota. We have an increase in North Dakota. Those birds are not coming down to South Dakota. They're staging up there in the big waters of the Missouri. They're just not coming down because they have all the resources they need. They have open water, and they have grain fields full of corn, essentially, is what they're targeting for feed. So one of the other things that we do quantify in South Dakota is the number of geese that are harvested along the Missouri River. This is quantified within 20 miles of the Missouri River, so it's essentially a buffer within 20 miles. And you can see there in the peak years we had about 50,000 harvested, excuse me, now we're down to about that 18,000 mark. So if you looked at the number of Canada goose hunters and you looked at this harvest rate, we're right on track. We're a 60% decline with the number of Canada goose hunters pursuing Canada geese in the Missouri River. We have a 60% decline essentially in the harvest rate, overall harvest of those Canada geese. So goose per hunter is really very similar. And so that just is an indication there that we aren't seeing the demand for these geese. We have less hunters, therefore we have fewer geese in the bag, essentially. Just to give you a little more detail as to where these are, Lake Oahe obviously has 12 refuges. North of Pier is what we consider Lake Oahe. That's the North Dakota border at the top of that map. Pier would be at the bottom of that map. So there's 12 refuges there. There's 231 river miles. There's two tribal reservations, Standing Rock and Cheyenne. You know, and there's varying degrees of use amongst all these different refuges. I can't say that enough, because we have some refuges that see a lot of use. There are some refuges that will hold thousands and thousands and thousands of geese, and I'll show you a graph here in just a minute that illustrates that. But we do fly. We try to fly weekly with our aircraft, and there's some refuges that don't hold any geese at all. And some of it's the proximity of that refuge. Some of it's, you know, it freezes right away or that sort of thing. So there are varying use of refuges by different waterfowl species for sure. Lake Sharp, three refuges along those 85 miles of river, two reservations there, Lower Brule and Crow Creek. There's Pier up in the upper left-hand corner, and then you have the Big Bedon Dam all the way down to the lower right-hand corner. We do see a lot of use on, there's a refuge there in gray, it's quite large, it's hard to see. Apologize for that, but that would be DeGray right there. That would be a refuge that sees a lot of waterfowl use. So there's, again, depending on how that refuge lays on the landscape, how much protection it has from northwest prevailing winds, how much food resources around that refuge does dictate how many waterfowl species are going to be utilizing that, or at least that's what we anecdotally see. And Lake Francis Case would be the last stretch of the refuge system within South Dakota on the Missouri River. There's six refuges there, 107 river miles. And you can see there that would be essentially where we just left off, all the way down to the Nebraska border. So again, we do fly every year. And we fly the entire Missouri River. We call it the Midwinter Waterfowl Survey. And we do this to let hunters know, you know, when the birds are here to harvest. We keep track of and try to quantify just the overall timing of the migration. It's not necessarily a scientific estimate, because we don't have a sightability model. There's no detection probabilities that are going to account for birds we miss or birds we just don't count. And that does happen. We don't count them all when we fly over. It's a rough estimate. But it's really to measure the migration patterns. It's really to measure the migration timing. And we throw this all in, we call it a dashboard. And this dashboard's pretty cool. I'm not going to turn it on live or anything like that. But it really quantifies different numbers and variables. It talks about the number of boat ramps. It talks about different characteristics of that refuge. How many dots end up in the refuge. So there's this... You see on here to the right, there's a refuge right there. There's a big dot on the north end of that refuge that indicates a large number of birds. There's a littler dot on the bottom that indicates a smaller number of birds. And then you can see all these dots on the periphery. Those are just, you know, groups of 100 or less per se of ducks or geese. And this is a pretty neat thing for staff to use to quantify, you know, when those birds are there, how many birds are there, or estimate. And then we relay that back to our users through thunderstorm maps and put that on our website. So it's a great tool for waterfowl hunters. They definitely have an idea of when the birds have arrived. So there's been a lot of discussions about, are these refuges serving their purpose? Are these refuges holding birds? Why are we seeing less hunters? Why are we seeing less birds? Is it the refuges that are causing the issue? Is the disturbance on the refuge, such as deer hunters that are out in boats, you know, pursuing deer in the Missouri River along the public land of the Missouri River? Is it fishermen? Fishing has been better lately on Lake Oahe and north. And is it fishermen that are disturbing these waterfowl? So there's a lot of different things that could be impacting waterfowl use, and there's no one thing. But at the end of the day, we looked at, this is Okobojo, for example. This is a refuge just north of Pier. It's a 10-year average of waterfowl count. So what we did is we smashed 10 years of data, essentially, and summarized it to see, once dark geese are in blue, ducks are in orange there, And one of the things that we hear a lot of is deer hunters are causing a lot of disturbance on that refuge. They're kicking the birds off. Those birds are leaving. They're heading to Nebraska. And that is, you know, there's some anecdotal observations of that for sure. However, we look at some of the data here, and you can see the deer season per se is really that box, up this first box on the left. And then from there, you'll see the numbers of waterfall start to increase. And those waterfall typically do not show up until mid to late November, even early December. We don't see peak waterfall numbers along the Missouri River, at least on this refuge, until mid-January. So one could say, well, by then the deer seasons are over, pheasant seasons are over, the disturbance factor's likely at a minimum. So we really don't think there is, you know, anecdotally, a disturbance factor on these refuges that's causing these birds to leave South Dakota. What we really believe, and we've talked to a lot of folks, a lot of biologists from North Dakota, Nebraska, and they're seeing similar trends as well, but we really believe these birds are staying in North Dakota. We really believe because of the resources they have up there that they've never used to have, more open water, milder winters per se, and then corn. Corn has moved west, not only in South Dakota, but also in North Dakota. So there's that food component up there as well for those birds. So we're seeing a shift in the migratory behavior, essentially, of these birds. We're not seeing as many coming down to South Dakota. So one of the things we've been asked is to really look at closing off some of these refuges to all human activity, essentially. Keep the deer hunters out, keep the fishermen out. Would that really help? And quite honestly, looking at the data we do have, the department doesn't think it would. And we don't think it would because we don't think we're getting these birds till December, January timeframe. Therefore, the disturbance of those refuges during the earlier portion of November, December would not, you know, determine the use of that refuge per se. So a couple other things to consider. You know, we understand that, you know, we're always trying to manage for multi-use. And as you know, as commissioners, balancing multi-use, balancing different user groups is quite difficult. And we wrangle with that as well. And right now, the department would really like to recommend to leave these refuges the way they are. Leave them as they currently stand and really just see once how that does play out even down the road as far as are we going to continue to see the use or these birds stay in North Dakota longer periods of time? And if so, we might have to adjust our refuge, not our refuge, but our waterfall season dates and even get those dates later if we can based on the federal framework. With that, I mean, I would entertain any questions. We have a lot of great data, similar to this graph right here, that we can ask specific questions on specific refuges on. We have actually excellent data for this refuge system in particular along the Missouri River because we do have counts, flight estimates for quite some time. We have about 15 years worth of data. So we can make some better informed decisions because we do have data. The Northeast conversation, if you recall, we didn't have waterfall count data, and that's one of the things that we do have here. But with that, I'm sure there's some questions. I'd be happy to answer anything you might have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions? Commissioner Olson.
Thanks. Commissioner Olson, when you do your flyovers, what would you estimate the daily average for amount of miles that those birds and refuges will fly away from the refuge to feed?
Yeah, no, we've been actually answered that question or asked that question numerous times, and I've actually answered or asked the question specifically to one of our biologists, Rocco Morano, and I'd agree with them. I've seen birds feed up to 25 miles away from that refuge. Typically, though, they're going to be less than that. 5 to 10, I would say. It's hard. I don't have a good quantifiable estimate. We've never really studied that in South Dakota. But anecdotally, I would say between 5 and 15 miles. And some even closer. Some will just feed a mile from the refuge and not go very far at all.
Mr. Sharp.
Mr. Sharp here. Thanks, Kevin. My sense is that this year we might have done some flyovers for counts prior to opening weekend of deer and then after. Was there any evidence that the deer hunters up in those areas pushed the waterfowl out?
Yes. Commissioner Sharp, we actually did do some flights, and that is actually in some of this data here, but it's lumped in with other years. If I were to just pull out 2009 data, it would look very similar to this graph up here right now. We've seen very, very few birds before the deer season started. Very few. Zeros in most refuges along the Missouri River, except up north. We do see some birds north of Mobridge because they're starting to trickle in. But as far as areas around Pier and south of Pier, the birds just haven't really showed up yet in large numbers that are noticeably, you know, significant from the airplane. We see things start to increase, as you can see, about the end of November, early December. Early December is when we start seeing more things freeze up, especially all the small sloughs. Like right now, the only open water around Pier is essentially the Missouri River. Everything else is pretty much locked up, locked tight with ice. And so we'll start to see these birds concentrate more towards that open water. And typically, peak freeze-up around the Missouri River corridor is that second week, third week in December. Sometimes we have open water all the way to January. Our park staff, they keep those boat docks in as long as possible. And the second week of December is typically when we try to get those boat docks out, and sometimes we get a little too late and they get frozen, and that creates more work. But at the end of the day, the end of November, early December is when we start to see those birds start concentrating to those refuges based on the temperatures.
So there, you didn't see any discernible difference in numbers because there basically weren't any waterfowl around prior and after opening weekend of deer season.
Yes, and this 10-year graph will show that as well. I mean, the pre-deer hunt, the bird numbers just aren't significant enough to see a spike in this graph. Even during the deer hunt, you know, the 16-day East River or West River deer seasons, it's not till that early December time frame is when we'll start to see a significant amount of birds trickle into the Missouri River corridor.
Want to get some more? Sure. Commissioner Sharp.
Okay, thank you. I want to make sure everybody else has a chance to ask questions as they see them. Well, the department kind of opened this door a year ago, and I'm not sure we've reached a conclusion or a consensus that the stakeholder group feels good about. I don't think our last meeting met the expectations. I think that meeting took a turn away from what that stakeholder group might have thought that meeting was going to be about. So I guess in order to close this circle, it may make sense to have close to a full day meeting, if this group wants to do it, where you can present data like this for the first part of the morning, and then maybe move into an idea session where people's thoughts can just be put on the board and not necessarily debated on the merits of how good they are, and get everybody's questions down on paper, that then we can provide the answers to all these questions on what's legal, what's not legal, what could be done, can we close the season, and, you know, for only have shooting till noon, lower the possession limit on a daily basis, the bag limit, because some people have ideas on that. I mean, really try and answer all that group's questions that seem to pop up, and then get those answers out to that group. And from there, I think we could maybe delineate what's possible, what may not be possible, and then how they can go about making recommendations, whether they need to make proposals to the commission, whether it has to be legislative changes, to kind of close the loop on what we did when we opened the door on what should we do with the refuges. And I think your data there would be, you know, beneficial, because I doubt if most of that group has seen this type of data. Thoughts on that kind of approach? And I'm not suggesting that we have a meeting where we reach a conclusion as a commission or a department and say, okay, this is where we're going to go with it. I think we may want to be more, and we're going to provide the information, facilitate a meeting where we get the questions asked, we can track down the answers, and then that stakeholder group along the Missouri corridor can maybe come up with their own plans on how to approach making waterfowl hunting better in the central part of the state.
Yeah, Commissioner Sharp, that is a good recommendation. Anytime we have an opportunity to engage with our stakeholders, you know, the department is in favor of that interaction and that involvement with the public. I mean, that's a big part of how we manage wildlife in South Dakota, no doubt. We can do that. We can have a meeting with this group if that's what the commission wishes the department to do. I would have staff, you know, present similar objective data that we have here today. But again, I mean, I want to make it very clear, the department's recommendation is to leave things the way we have them with the refuge system. We feel like there isn't anything that's broken, but we do see some differences in migratory behavior, and we do think that that is the reason why we're not seeing these refuges full of birds right now. Hopefully they're full of birds here in about a month, because for the waterfowl hunters, they're waiting for them. I'm waiting for them. I think that if that's the recommendation from the commission, we can do that.
Commissioner Sharp.
Thanks. And one thing I want to make clear, I thought you did a really good job last December in trying to get the group that was in that meeting to recognize this was in draft form. We were asking for input, and it kind of spun out of control. And so if we were to take this approach, the email that I would suggest go out is, department recommends leave everything as it is. However, we'd be willing to facilitate a meeting with that stakeholder group to go over this information and to provide answers for their questions. And if the stakeholder group doesn't feel that's time well spent, then we won't have the meeting. But it's, again, we will clearly spell out it's not a meeting to debate the merits of anybody's ideas. You know, so it's, let's close this one. No, I want to close that one. Well, that's not fair because, you know, whatever. I think we need to have a more adult discussion than what happened last December. So I think that needs to be made clear to the stakeholder group if we're going to have this kind of meeting. But hopefully that would close the loop on this because, again, we come out with a proposal to make some changes, and we've since backed away from that. And I'm not sure that answers all the questions of that particular group. So whoever would want to be involved, you know, we'd have to get their names and put them on an email list and kind of approach it from that standpoint. And we can even send out an email to see if that group wants to do something like that. And if they do, then we can facilitate the meeting. And if they don't, then we move on, case closed.
Yes.
I'm curious, any other comments from the rest of the commissioners? Because I know people have thoughts.
Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Whitmire. When I was at the meeting that Commissioner Sharp is talking about, there was a lot of discussion of years ago, you know, how the numbers have plummeted, you know, 60,000 to 20,000 or million, substantial change. Well, as you've alluded to, North Dakota, things have changed, Canada. Since it's a federal interest, is there good data from back in the 80s? And I remember very well people from our area driving out to the river for goose hunting. That was quite popular. Did that simply not happen in the 80s, where the geese were holding up in Canada and North Dakota the way they do today?
Yeah, so the flight data, Commissioner Whitmire, that we have today goes back in the late or early 2000s. Mid-2000s is when we really started to quantify the numbers, you know, on paper per se. And we have done flights before that time. I shouldn't say that's the only time, but we've been more consistent in flying since that time. And you're right. I mean, just looking at the harvest of 55,000 back in, well, it would have been 1980 or right around that time when you're referring to, when we did see, you know, folks from Sioux Falls and Watertown, and everybody was heading to Pier to shoot Canada geese. That doesn't seem to be happening anymore because the Canada geese aren't there till late, or they don't show up at all. We didn't see that migratory behavior we see today back 30, 40 years ago. We didn't. Those birds seem to have moved out of North Dakota sooner. And we do believe it's because of agriculture moving west, corn moving west, and having that food resource there to those birds up in North Dakota maybe changed that migratory behavior because they didn't have to come down south, you know, and it depends on how much snow they have, how cold it is. That big water up north is staying open. And once that does freeze, though, those birds will come. They will come. And they have to have open water somewhere to be able to make it through the winter. But we didn't see the same migratory patterns 30, 40 years ago that we see today. I mean, that's anecdotally and somewhat by the data I presented to you here today, that's what it's telling us.
Any other questions or comments? So why don't we do that? We'll follow up and see how best to proceed and then report back to the commission. Is that acceptable to everybody? Okay.
Commissioner, one more.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
A timeline on that. I mean, when would we like to have this meeting? And how, just kind of give me an idea of how much time you'd like to have to discuss this and when we want a final product.
We talked briefly at lunch and thought maybe we could try to find a day for a meeting in February.
Okay.
Does that work?
That helps. Thank you. Yes, we'll shoot for February.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I was going to say if we don't get it done until next Tuesday or Wednesday, that should work out.
Thanks.
But February is certainly a good second alternative.
All right. I'll go with February. Thank
there you.
All right. Let's do the open forum. There's no public hearing today because we aren't